Hello and welcome to the Inspiring Women Interviews with Amanda Alexander. Interviews are with female leaders who are passionate about helping all women to achieve success. Together, we can change the world. You can find out more about Amanda at amandaalexander.com. Enjoy the show. Today, I am delighted to welcome Maggie Berry, the Executive Director for Europe of WeConnect International. Now, WeConnect essentially exists to encourage and support global supplier diversity for women-owned businesses, and it helps women-owned businesses to connect with multinational corporations, something that historically has not been quite so easy for women-owned businesses to do. Now, I'm going to let Maggie just tell you a little bit more about WeConnect in a moment. But let me just tell you about Maggie. So Maggie joined the organisation in December 2012, and she has lead responsibility for the management, leadership and development of WeConnect Europe. Her role is about developing corporate and public sector support, as well as growing and developing the database and network of registered and certified women business owners across the UK and Europe. Now, before she joined WeConnect, Maggie was managing director of womenintechnology.co.uk, an online job board, which was also a recruitment and networking forum for women working in technology profession. She was involved from Women in Technology's inception in autumn of 2004, and she managed all aspects of the website and the networking activities for Women in Technology. Maggie's wonderful wow moments include being honoured by the World Economic Forum as a young global leader, and she's currently serving as a Global Agenda Council member on employment for the World Economic Forum. Also in July 2011, she was listed as one of the 15 UK-based International Alliance for Women World of Difference Award winners. Wow, that's a mouthful. It's very impressive, but a mouthful. And in July 2010, Maggie was included in Management Today's 35 under 35 list. Now, as if all that wasn't enough, she's also a Freeman of the Worshipful Company of Information Technologists. So I think it's fair to say that Maggie knows something about women in technology in particular. Welcome, Maggie. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Amanda.
Can we start? Can you just tell us a bit more about WeConnect and what you exist for and how you help to connect women-owned businesses?
Absolutely. So WeConnect International, the W stands for Women's Enterprise, and we're all about connecting women-owned businesses into the corporate supply chain. It's an international organisation. We're actually headquartered out of Washington DC, and I've got colleagues all around the world in Canada, India, China, Latin America, Africa, but I'm based in the UK, and my remit is I work and look after our corporate members and our women-owned businesses here in Europe. So it's an international supplier diversity campaign, and by that we have a lot of focus here around workforce diversity and to big companies hiring more women, keeping them, promoting them, getting coming back after maternity leave and all that good stuff. And WeConnect is actually looking at who do big corporations, who do they buy from, what businesses are they buying from, and are they buying from women-owned businesses? And as a concept, supplier diversity is very embedded in the US market. They've got a lot of support in place for diverse-owned businesses, women, ethnic minority, LGBT, etc. And the big corporations there are looking to roll their programs out globally. And WeConnect International was set up a number of years ago to help those firms roll their supplier diversity programs out into other regions of the world. Europe was actually the pilot program about 7 years ago, and I've been working with the organization since 2012, so about just over 2.5 years. So I work with big multinationals like IBM, Coca-Cola, Accenture, Ernst & Young, and our group of women-owned businesses. But very specifically, we work with majority-owned women's businesses, so businesses that are 51% or more owned by women. And the model is that our corporate members tell us what they're buying through their tenders or RFPs, and our job is to identify women-owned businesses who could be a potential match and who could participate in the tender process. It's almost like corporate matchmaking in the supply chain. So hugely interesting, hugely challenging, and it keeps me very busy.
I've got one thing I wanted to say, Maggie, was I met Maggie at a WeConnect event where I was introduced as a guest there. And it was an absolutely brilliant event down in London. And as a result of that event, just from the networking, I don't know if I told you this, I actually gained some business with a big corporate. So there you go. QED.
So the model works. That's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, we work through formal procurement channels, so where the corps are issuing a formal tender, but we also facilitate a lot of connections around the edges. So, you know, if women-owned businesses come to our events and they get the opportunity to meet our corporate, the representatives from our corporate members, all sorts of things happen. And sometimes it takes a while. We had our last conference probably about 9 months or so ago now, and a number of our women-owned businesses are coming forward to me now saying, actually, on the back of that, I met so-and-so, we've done this, I've done, you know, it's kind of carried on, and that's now come to fruition in, you know, in doing paid-for work with them. But it can take a while. It doesn't, you don't just knock on the door of a big corporate and start to work with them straight away. It can take a while to build up relationships. But that's, so it's all in the name. It's Women's Enterprise and it's Connect. So it's WeConnect.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, for everybody listening, as you know, I really like to sort of connect personally and ask people's journey and, you know, what works for them, etc. But at this point, I just want to dive in, Maggie, and just ask you about the need for WeConnect. Now, on your website, it says a diverse supplier base is no longer an option. It is a business imperative. And WeConnect is here to create that opportunity. For those who might not be au fait with the importance of diversity and who might think, because there is always an argument about diversity, isn't there? Why do we need to have something that connects women-owned businesses? You know, what about men-owned businesses? What about, you know, someone else-owned businesses? How would you respond to that within the context of it being a business imperative?
Absolutely. So I have those conversations fairly regularly. I think for me, the driver is around this. In, let's just take the UK, women make up about 20% of business owners in the UK. 20%. We're 50% of the working population. So we're already in the minority in terms of business ownership. And business ownership is directly linked to economic wealth and economic power. So for us, what we're looking at is how can we help put more women into a situation where they've got the opportunity to bid for more business and to grow their businesses and to grow their economic wealth. So globally, WeConnect International is essentially a women's economic empowerment campaign. I think here in the UK, it is a very new business concept. And the majority of the corporate organisations that we're working with, they're US-based multinationals who have very robust programmes in the US supporting diverse-owned businesses, and they want to have these programmes in all regions of the world where they're working. So it is a very new part of the diversity landscape, but it is essentially supporting SMEs and underrepresented SMEs. So when people say to me, what about men? Well, business is very male, and when you look at lists of successful business people, they're often populated by men. I just read an article this morning as I was eating my breakfast on the BBC. I saw it on Facebook. It was about the top 17 people in advertising globally, and 16 of them are white males earning the most money. A one woman, no ethnic minorities, and it's things like that that you see time and again, and that's what spurs me on. I want to see more women succeeding and achieving. Through WeConnect, we're looking at female entrepreneurs and female business owners. Through all the work that I've done with women in technology and continue to do with women in technology, it's around helping women succeed and achieve in the technology profession here in the UK. So there are lots of reasonings around working with SMEs generally, the diversity of thought that they bring, they're more nimble, they can often move more quickly than some of the big suppliers. And it just so happens that at WeConnect, our focus is specifically on women-owned SMEs.
Excellent answer. Nobody could argue with that, I would say anyway. Thanks, Maggie. I want to ask you, now I've given you this introduction, and you know, when I read your profile, and probably a lot of people when they're listening to your profile with your awards and plaudits will think, wow, now here is a high-flying woman. Do you consider yourself to be a high-flying woman?
I don't know. It's not a phrase that I would use to describe myself, but I do have very high expectations of what I want to achieve. And anything that I do, I only want to do things if they're going to be good. I have, you know, very high standards of myself. So, and I've worked very hard around Women in Technology and that network. I work very hard around that. And with WeConnect, it's the same. I'm pushing very hard all the time. Does that make it high flying? I don't know. Am I passionate and committed? Absolutely. Have I enjoyed lots of different success in my career? Yes. But, you know, it hasn't just happened overnight, and it hasn't come without me doing anything. I've had to work quite hard, but I also feel very content when I've proved to myself that I can do something, I can deliver something, I can deliver another great event. You mentioned that, you know, we first got connected at a WeConnect conference. You know, when I get to the end of the day when we've done a big event like that, and I'm like, that was good. I can feel that the feedback in the room is positive, and that's great.
Yeah, you know, I think that the reason I kind of put you on the spot and asked you that question is because I think it's interesting. I think very few women would actually say, oh, yes, of course, I regard myself as, you know, a high flying woman. I think the term is, I think any term to do with female success can often be loaded with a whole set of beliefs and attitudes that aren't necessarily positive. I think it's an interesting thing. I'm in a group on Facebook called, it's a closed group of female entrepreneurs, and it's called High Performing Women. Now, I know that a number of members have had quite an interesting reaction to that, you know, that High Performing Women label. And I wonder if we need to create a new label of you know, women who are living, I don't know, high purposeful women.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, I think everybody's different, and one of my beliefs is that success is different for everybody, and success is different at different points in your career as well, and at different points in your life. And what you have to understand is what success means for you right now and what you're looking to achieve in the future. And so, yes, you're quite right. The moniker, like high flying, no, I mean, that's not what I think about myself, but I want to be successful, and I want to do well at whatever I'm working on at that particular moment.
Yeah. Did you set a master plan, a kind of a set of goals for your careers? Is that something that you do on a regular basis?
No, no, not at all. I've never, if I'm honest, a very kind of potted history. I've got a history degree. When I graduated, I went home to Scotland, and I worked at home in Scotland for a few years, and then I came down to London in 2000, and I got a job with a recruitment firm. Didn't particularly really understand that it was technology recruitment, but I got the job, and I took every opportunity that came along. Women in Technology came along, and I worked on that, and then I joined WeConnect in 2012. Did I have a goal? No. Was there a plan? No. Did I take every single opportunity that came along and made the most of it? Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, some people I meet have very clear goals, and I'm almost a little bit envious of them, because they've obviously got a bit of a path marked out. And I don't particularly. I know what I enjoy, and I know the kind of things that I would like to see myself potentially doing in the future. And we're going to be working for an awfully long time. When I think about careers now, you know, it's certainly not just one linear career path. I think we're going to have time to have various different reincarnations in our careers, because we're going to be working for so many years. But no, I haven't had a master plan, but I've been very lucky and taken opportunities as they've come along.
Yeah, I think that whole attitude of taking opportunities can take us perhaps further sometimes than creating goals. Goals are great, depending on, again, it's, you know, up to the individual. But I'm always a little bit wary of when setting goals, that you don't set a goal and then set something so unbelievably unachievable, and then you defeat yourself on the way to the goal.
Yes. I mean, I think it's one of the things that I think potentially contributes to Things like the pay gap, things like women not being in as many senior positions, is I think sometimes we are prone to sitting in a job that we enjoy for maybe a little bit too long, and staying with companies sometimes for a little bit too long, and that we don't move roles frequently enough to kind of get the promotion and get the pay rise re-established. You know, when you join a new organisation, you establish yourself as the senior person, not somebody who's kind of worked their way up through the ranks. And that's a piece of advice I share with people when they start new jobs. It's like, well, think about how long you're going to stay, and don't necessarily always think this is going to be my job for the next 10 years, because that's probably going to be too long.
Yeah. Do you know what is the average that people stay in one organisation now? I know it's dropped a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't know. But some organisations are so big that you can have a whole career in one organisation and in different divisions, and you can work in different locations globally. And I know plenty of people who have had, you know, 25-year-long careers in one organisation, but they've never stayed in the same job for more than, you know, 2 or 3 years, because they keep moving on and on and up in different things. I don't know that stat, but I do think sometimes when you're happy, you can stay somewhere maybe just a little bit longer than. If you're looking for that career progression, then you maybe should be.
Yeah. Related to that, Maggie, about career progression and moving organisations, one thing that obviously as women that we have to address, because many women take that route, and it's a route I took, which is to have kids. And yes. One of the big issues that I know you will have been involved with and you still are addressing within WeConnect is how do we help women to maintain their careers, continue with their careers after maternity leave? And I have a very personal interest in this question, because I'm one of those kind of highly trained IT people. I was an accredited project manager who simply, you know, well, I dropped out of my career because it was made incredibly difficult for me to continue once I had my first son. So from your perspective, what do you think we should be doing, and actually what do you think both employers and employees, because personal responsibility is a big thing here, should be doing to retain more women after maternity leave, and particularly in the IT industry?
Absolutely. I mean, if people talk to me and say, what, you know, what are some of the issues facing, you know, facing female careers, I do think maternity is an issue. I think we need to differentiate between maternity leave, being in a job, going maternity leave and coming back to your job, and actually taking time out to have a family and not working for a number of years, whether that's 2, 3, 5, 10 years, whatever. I think the issue for me is more around the longer career breaks, where you lose touch with the profession that you're in or with the employer. I'd say mostly around maternity leave, you have to understand the environment that you're in. And if you're working, and you'll know the environment you're in, and if you decide to take the maximum 12 months out, well, there possibly will be some impact on your role in the organisation. And in that time, everything's carrying on without you. I mean, I've certainly talked to some women, say within financial services, who've been very clear, and they've basically, if I'd taken the full 12 months, you know, my job would have been gone, and I have to be realistic. And so they took a shorter amount of time. I mean, the UK has very generous maternity leave, and I have no issue with it. It's fantastic. When I look at some of my colleagues who work in the US and how quickly they have to come back, it just seems so sad that they have to leave their young children behind so quickly. But I think you have to be realistic of the environment that you're in. I also think coming back, there has to be flexibility on both sides. But for when you've had a big gap, that's where the issue is. When you've kind of left the industry and actually your connections with the industry have kind of lapsed a little bit, and you're coming back in, and really you're probably looking for a job with a bit of flexibility, because your kids at that point are maybe just starting school and things like that. And what I've seen over the last kind of 10 years or so is a growth of more focused return to work schemes. I think employers spend a lot of time and effort on graduate hiring, and invest an awful lot of money in all these young people coming in. And I think if only just a percentage of that effort could be spent on bringing back female experience, female talent back into the industry, upskilling, getting their confidence back up, working with them maybe on some projects that they can work on, outside of the kind of maybe the main cut and crust of the business, so that they can spend a bit of time kind of getting back into the world of work. I think there's a huge amount of benefit for those kind of programs. But there has, as I said earlier, has to be flexibility on both sides, both from the women returning into the workplace and also from the employer, and not necessarily thinking that they're going to be up to speed in the space of 2 weeks, because that isn't, you know, that's not the case. And there's a whole piece around flexible working in the UK, and we have such a culture of kind of nine to five and presenteeism. And actually, especially in an industry like IT, should be able to facilitate flexible working and working from home, and actually it should be based on the delivery of what you're doing, depending on the nature of your job. Not all jobs, you know, can kind of do this, but that as long as you're delivering what you need, it doesn't matter which hours of the day you're actually working, and you shouldn't necessarily have to be doing big commutes every day if you could potentially work from home. So for me, the issue is around, I think maternity leave is there is kind of legislation in place to support that. But the bigger issue is around when you've taken a bigger gap, and how do you get them back into the industry? And there are thousands of women in the UK with tech qualifications which just need a bit of upskilling to enable them to come back into the industry. And we're facing a digital skills shortage. And I know so many employers I speak to would absolutely love it if we could find them more experienced female technologists. And I think the pool of returners to work is not completely, but very untapped.
Yes, I agree. I remember, I've forgotten which company it was, but it was last summer I read about, it was a big company in London had created a structured program to help women who had had career gaps to go back into, and I'm sure it was an IT company, and I think it was one of the consulting companies, they were so oversubscribed by women who had, you know, had started their careers in consultancy and then had career breaks to have children. It was a phenomenal success, but they couldn't keep up with demand of the amount of really talented, really good women who wanted to actually access this program. So yeah, the demand is there, both sides, isn't it?
The demand is definitely there, and I think for some companies they're still quite at the early stages of implementing these programs, so they've maybe only got say 10 to 15 places on a program, but you're quite right, the demand would probably be for 100 people on those programs. And absolutely, there are a lot of women who made the decision to take time out, which is absolutely fine, but how can we integrate them back into the industry quicker, more effectively and more efficiently? That is a key thing.
And what would you say to a woman listening to this who's thinking, yeah, that's great, but, you know, maybe she was in IT 10 years ago, you know, she's been looking after her children at home or doing something, some sort of career break, but she wants to get back into IT, she doesn't live in London, and, you know, realistically, these programs are still few and far between. What can she do to proactively get back into it?
So I think one of the first things to look at would be the technical skills, and maybe looking at some local colleges to see if there's some courses that you can do just to get back up to speed on everything to do with the IT industry or the sector of the IT industry that you're in. Because we've got to remember, IT is massive, and there's so many different parts within it. There are also lots of programs around just getting yourself kind of work ready again, things like kind of getting your CV back together. Have you got a LinkedIn profile? Are you connected into different groups? Have you got a sense of what's going on within your profession, within your, you know, your area of expertise? And I think there's also the power of the network and reaching out to colleagues that you've worked with previously, just to get a sense of, do they know people that you could talk to? And I think the power of a network is incredibly important. And one of the things that we ran at Women in Technology a few times, a managing maternity course, so kind of getting ready for when you're going on maternity leave, things to think about before, during and afterwards. And one of the things, if you are going and you are going to take a proper break, is to keep up your network and not to cut yourself off completely, but to keep up your professional memberships if you can afford to, and to go to some events, maybe say, actually, I'm going to go to something once a quarter. I'm just going to, you know, make sure that I'm giving myself that time for my career. And that's, you know, that's very, very important to kind of keep up those connections and just keep an eye on what's going on. I talked to plenty of women who have just stopped completely and they've had no kind of interaction with anybody, and then kind of 5 or 6 years down the line, they're like, right, I'm going to start again. Where do I start? But they've, you know, the connections are all lost, and it takes a while for them to pick up again and to re-establish connections. But LinkedIn's a brilliant tool for that, because you can find people and reach out to them and get a coffee set up with them. And I know a lot of stuff happens in London. It simply does. It's where a lot of head offices are, and I have to say, I don't know how you get around that, because I think a lot of these return to work programs will probably be in head offices. But interesting, you touched on consulting, and consulting often takes you all around the UK. So it's just a case of keeping an eye open and seeing if there's anything local to you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really good advice, Maggie. And I want to add to the LinkedIn thing as well. Finding groups, finding the right kind of groups that are either industry specific or, you know, maybe professional women's groups. And, you know, you don't even have to travel to network nowadays. And you having LinkedIn, it's not just about having your profile there. That's not going to just statically having a profile there. That's important. But also to just, you know, go into LinkedIn, every couple of days and, you know, look what's going on, look into a group, contribute to a group. It is all helpful, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's so much information just on LinkedIn alone, loads, you know, and there's so many different groups, and you can keep an eye open, and a lot of groups have job postings as well. And there are a number of organisations, networks, that look at return to work programmes as well, you know, geared up to helping women get ready and be ready to go back to work.
Yeah. Thanks, Maggie. I want to ask you about that, the great big subject that is leadership, which could go on for ages, but just kind of looking, just honing in on leadership, you know, a word that covers all bases. I'd love to know what that means to you, and what qualities do women bring to leadership, and you know, why is it important that they step up to the table and bring those leadership qualities?
So I know when people think about leadership, immediately I think it comes to mind like you're really leading a team.
Yeah.
The environments that I've personally worked in have been really quite small. I've mainly worked in an SME environment. And so for me, leadership has more been around issues and campaigns and championing. You know, when we set Women in Technology up back in 2005, there was only a couple of organized, you know, groups looking at women in tech and the issue around women in tech. And we really championed and really pushed that agenda. And now when I look around, there's lots of fabulous networks supporting women in tech, you know, just as one sector, which is just fantastic. So for me, leadership certainly does cover lots of different things, and it isn't necessarily just about leading a team of people. I think for me, what I would be looking for for a leader for me are always, I like very clear explanations about why decisions are being made. I want to understand why this is the decision that is being taken, and the impact that it's going to have on the organisation, and what I can do to contribute towards it. And I think when I think about good leaders, I don't necessarily think that men and women are so different. I genuinely think when you meet somebody who's good or a good leader, they just are. It doesn't matter whether they're male or female. There are bad male leaders and good male leaders, and bad female leaders and good female leaders. So for me, it's almost irrespective. It's just looking at the right, you know, the right traits, and that they're taking their team with them. They're taking responsibility for the team. They're the driving force, and they're leading by example, and not necessarily kind of just taking acknowledgement for all the hard work of their team, but definitely sharing the glory. But I think everybody's different, and I don't think it matters whether it's male or female. It's just the, you know, good leadership traits that you want to see in whoever is managing you.
Yes. I agree. What do you think the main obstacles are for aspiring female leaders right now?
I'm not sure honestly it's obstacles. I think it's just being really aware of what you want to achieve and equipping yourself with all the skills that you need to be ready to kind of achieve that. So Networking is super important. It's not just for senior people. Get out there, get involved. Get involved with your local, I don't know, whatever your local chamber of commerce is, if you're running your own business, or if you're in a profession, what's your trade body, and are you, you know, get yourself known and involved in building a profile for yourself, for your own brand. I mean, I touched on, I do think children and career breaks, they kind of pause careers. And as I touched on, I want to see better on-ramping, back-ramp, you know, of women coming back into work. But I think there are so many opportunities. It's not necessarily obstacles, it's opportunities, and being brave enough, shall we say, to take those opportunities and to, you know, apply for that job, apply for that promotion. What's the worst that they can happen? They say no, you know, that's the worst. The best is that they're going to give you the job and they're going to give you a pay rise.
Yeah. Now, I want to pick up on what you just said there about being brave enough. So how can women be braver?
I think you've just sometimes got to go for it. I'll give an example. We, at Women in Technology, touched on, we had an online job board, and we helped firms try to hire more technical women. And, you know, sometimes we'd approach women about jobs, and they'd be a little bit, you know, I'm not sure, maybe yes, okay, you can, okay, I'll go forward. And you'd almost be persuading them to put themselves forward. And then they'd get requests for an interview, which would be great, because the employer would be like, they'd look great, we'd love to meet them. And so then the women would go, actually, I'm not right for the job, and I'm not going to go for the interview, and they'd back out. And I think sometimes it's just understanding the structure, that even if we just take, say, hiring and recruitment in, when you look at a job spec, you know, it's a wish list of, say, 10 things that the employer is looking for. They're probably going to be really happy if they can get 5 or 6 of them, and they get the right attitude and the right kind of person they want in their team. But women often look at a job spec and say, I have to be able to do everything and more before I'll apply. And anecdotally, it's much more likely that a guy will look at it and go, oh, I could do a couple of those things, I'll apply for that. So I think men are a bit more speculative in how they're applying for jobs and what they're doing and going for promotion. And I wish we'd do more of that ourselves as well, and just go for it. And I say, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? They say no. So they say no. They, you know, move on to the next thing, or wait another 6 months. But I think if you don't ask, you don't get. And if you don't apply, you're certainly not going to get an opportunity to have an interview and to put put across yourself and all the talent and expertise that you might bring to the team. So I think you've just sometimes got to be brave. There was that, I mean, when I was young, that book was Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And I think if you are nervous about stuff, you won't go far wrong reading that and getting some of the tips from that. And I think just go for things. I always had, somebody once told me, if you're not feeling brave, just act as if you are brave. If you don't 100% know what you're talking about, presenting, just act as if you do. Because you're probably going to be more expert than the person that you're talking to. If they're not, you know, if they're not, say you're talking to a client and your company is the expert in what they're doing, you will have more knowledge even if you don't think that you do. And I think you can just be confident and, yeah, just act as if. And they won't know. They can't read your mind. And actually, obviously, there's situations where you can't do that, but mostly it's just be brave, and you've just got to take that first step. It's always easier once you've done it once. It's never completely easy, but it's easier and it gets more manageable. I remember a lady talking to me once about, she always negotiated pay rises. She had, you know, she would always ask for a pay rise every year. She said the first few times I did it, it was really awkward, and then it just became completely normal. The negotiation discussion around salary, just it's really awkward, but it became much more normal. And she's now, I do it every year, and I've had increases because I've asked. And if you don't ask, they're not necessarily going to come forward and give you one.
Yeah, I have a fantastic recent example. One of my clients went for a new job, and it was completely outside of her comfort zone. And she got the job, and she relates this story. She said, yeah, and then I got the job, and she said, and you'll never guess what? I said, no, I want a more money. I want a bigger package. And they said yes. And she was, you know, she was absolutely amazed at what she could do just by
asking
and not assuming. And it's a story to tell ourselves. By the time we publish this interview, Maggie, there will be on my blog quite coincidentally. In fact, I've just finished writing it, a post called "How to Overcome Fear of Rejection." And I wrote that blog post. I was inspired by, I came across a Chinese guy called Jia Jiang, and he did something called 100 days of rejection. He did this challenge two years ago, and his goal was to desensitize himself from the pain of rejection. And I think that the fear of failure that we have, and particularly women have, is a fear of rejection. And I believe that that is very much a fundamental human fear, because as human beings, we're tribal animals. But the it's really interesting, this 100 days of rejection, and the lessons that Jia Jiang learned from that echo what you have been saying, which is, you know, it's just about doing it and asking, desensitizing yourself, taking that first step. And he even quotes the Susan Jeffers book, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. And there's going to be some things that you ask. For example, he asked on the 97th day, so his setting himself for rejection wasn't particularly an ask, was to give a public speech on a public street. And even though he'd done 96 of these, and you'd think by now he'd be like, yeah, I can do anything, I'm not worried about, you know, what people think of people rejecting me, he said he really, really struggled with this. And I think that really echoes what you've said, which is, you know, it's not always going to be easy. It's about just kind of taking a deep breath and saying, let's just see what happens.
Yeah. What I've heard anecdotally from some of my connections and network connections who do work in, say, large corporates, what they say is that the guys are always asking. The guys are always there knocking on the door, talking about what they've been doing, promoting their projects, promoting themselves. And she says, and the women don't do that as often. Or they're more, you know, they're not doing it as regularly. So when we think about things like a pay gap, I think some of our behaviour could contribute to it. Because if, you know, if they ask, they'll maybe get, they get listened to, and they maybe do get a rise. And if you're not asking, well, they're fine then. They're not going to be thinking about giving you more money because you've not asked. Now in some organisations it's very clear, and they've got, you know, kind of banners of salary bands and things like that. But not in a lot of private sector organisations they don't. So yeah, ask. You might be pleasantly surprised.
Yes, you. Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In is echoing exactly what you're saying here.
Yeah, I'm going to be really honest. I haven't actually read Lean In, but I know some of the key points, and I think it's really important. If you want to progress and succeed and achieve, you've got to be engaged, and you've got to spend time on yourself. And sometimes you might work in an organisation where they're not prepared to invest in you. So you need to maybe think, right, do I need to invest in myself? Do I need to get a coach? Do I need to find somebody in another organisation that could maybe be a mentor for me? Do I need to, you know, what other things do I need to be doing to equip myself with the skills for the career that I want? We used to ask, when we were doing the training courses at Women in Technology, we used to ask, who's paid for the course? Have you paid, or has your employer paid? And we had a fairly even split, that about 50% of the participants would have paid for themselves, and about 50% would have had it paid for by their employer. But we also used to give people tips on asking their employer to pay for something, because it might be the first time that they'd asked, you know, wanted to go and do this external course, would work pay for it? Mm. And some of them didn't even, you know, they weren't used to asking those kind of questions, and sometimes when they asked, they did get it paid, and that's fantastic. But I think you do need to think about, what do I need to do for myself? You know, is it that I actually need to spend some time learning a specific skill set, or actually am I wanting to be in the leadership position in a couple of years? What courses do I need to be looking at? Do I need to be thinking about doing an MBA? What do other people in the organisation who are ahead of me, what kind of skills have they got? What kind of things have they been doing that have enabled them to get to their position? So it's very important to think about, be very self-aware of what you need to be equipping yourself with. And I mean outside of your technical skills for your job, whatever your job might be. I'm talking about the additional skills you need to be that well-rounded professional, whether it's in technology, whether it's in finance, whether it's engineering. What other things do you need to be succeeding in your career?
Oh, absolutely brilliant advice, Maggie. Thank you very much for that. I am going to start bringing us to a close now, but I just want to finish by asking you what I think is a very important question. What do we need to do to encourage our daughters to reach higher? You know, what do we as our generation need to do to help the generation who will be the next leaders to, I guess, get out of their own way? Because I think the message here is that, you know, women, we tend to hold back.
I think role models are incredibly important. I think we need to think about who are young girls in the UK, who do they see? Who are the people that they're looking up to? And quite often that's going to be people in the media, or not necessarily teachers or parents, but maybe people that they would interact with. And actually sometimes it's not many. So I think the importance of role models and schools bringing in external speakers and giving their young people an opportunity just to hear from different professionals, different walks of life, and different things that you could achieve, I think that's incredibly important. I think the inspiration can just spark an imagination and set young people off on a completely different kind of career journey. I think parents are big influences on the careers that children choose. So we also need parents to be quite open-minded about what their children are interested in. The generation that I'm from is very much around, you know, you go to school, you go to university, and then you go and get a job. I think now that all the fees associated, the costs associated with getting a university education, there are some brilliant other routes into, you know, some fantastic apprenticeship schemes. There's whole programs now around bringing out young people and setting them off on an entrepreneurial route if they've got business ideas. There's so many different things out there, and it's just shining a spotlight on them for all young people, irrespective of where they are in the country, because, you know, London can sometimes feel a little bit like the centre of the universe because there's just so much stuff going on here. But there are also some fantastic programmes around the country, you know, especially, I mean, I talk a lot about tech because it's where I spend a lot of time, you know, going out and speaking to girls, talking about what a career in technology could be. But it's also the same within entrepreneurship. There's a whole piece around entrepreneurs and founders of companies going out and just talking to young people about their business journey, which is incredibly important. And I do wonder whether the generation of young boys that are growing up alongside daughters now, how different their perspectives will be as well.
Yes, I wonder about that too. I have, they call it Generation Y, don't they? Gen Y, the next generation. And I've heard that Gen Y are going to be far more demanding in terms of how they're able to work. So take, for example, Google, and I believe that the way they work, that there are no set hours. It's about you have your objectives and you meet your objectives. The whole working environment is set up to support a really, I guess, empowering, healthy environment that helps their employees' well-being. Now, I understand that Gen Y will be far more demanding of that in the workplace. And then again, an interesting article I read a few weeks ago was in The Guardian, and it was regarding the assumption that, well, this was about women, about the assumption that women are only interested in work-life balance. And they're asking, is our companies guilty of benevolent sexism? The quote from this study was that, here it is, just 14% felt a benchmark of success would be a better work-life balance, 44% wanted job satisfaction, while 34% wanted to be able to define their company's direction and leadership. It's not more time that women want, it's more power. And that makes me wonder, is that's this generation with women wanting power, will the next generation of women and men want more power, or will they just want more time to play?
But possibly a bit of both. I think the move towards being able to work more flexibly has got to come. When I look at what must be the extraordinary cost for some of these big businesses to maintain big offices in central city, you know, cities in the centre of town, I just think, how can they keep affording to pay for that when actually, you know, you could have a smaller site and people work from home and they, you know, they work flexibly. But you need to equip your managers with the skills they need to manage a remote team. And I think sometimes that can be the missing link in some of this. It's setting up flexible working, but we don't actually equip internally about how you actually manage those kind of things. I think work life is important. I certainly think in London, life can be incredibly busy and people do very long hours. I know my husband leaves the house at 6:30 every day and normally gets home about 7:30. They're long days. And I don't necessarily always think of it's about necessarily about power. I think people maybe just want a little bit more control over what's happening with their job and how they work, and I think technology now is so much better equipped to be able to offer that, and I think employers, we are gradually seeing a change.
Yes, and may that change continue on an upwards trajectory.
absolutely.
And of course, where you are with We Connect Europe is really, you know, at the forefront of actually driving that change. So Maggie, thank you very, very much for being here today. If you'd like to learn more about We Connect, you can go to weconnecteurope.org. I will put that in the show notes, which you can find on amandaalexander.com/podcast. And if you would like to connect with my interviewee today, Maggie Berry, you can find Maggie on LinkedIn. Again, I will put a link to Maggie so that you can connect with her on LinkedIn. I'm sure she'll be happy to say hi to you. And if you've enjoyed today's show, please don't keep it to yourself. Please spread the word. Do subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you've enjoyed it, please rate the show and give me a review. That would be much appreciated. Until next time, you've been listening to Amanda Alexander interviewing Maggie Berry on the Inspiring Women Interviews podcast. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Women Interviews. You can find the episode show notes, backlist episodes, and full transcriptions of each interview at amandaalexander.com/podcasts. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at AA the Coach or find me on Facebook at Amanda Alexander Coach.